Hey, it's Chris Spangle, host of We Are Libertarians, and I was recently delighted to be a guest on Al Jackson and Frank Caliendo's podcast called Al and Frank Try to Be Serious, which you can find at alandfrank.com. And they wanted to know what a libertarian was. So it's very exciting when people who are normies start asking questions about libertarians. So please take a listen to this, go subscribe to their channel, and if you like the show, if you like the episode, then please go and rate and review their new podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, wherever you listen to the show. That's really going to help them out and do it as a thank you for having a libertarian on. You know, we don't often get to talk to big audiences like this, so it's very exciting, and I hope that I did us all proud, and if you feel that way, then please do me a personal favor, subscribe to their show, and rate and review them. And you can get the podcast at alandfrank.com. So thanks for listening.
We're starting in 5, 4, 3, 2. Okay, there it is. It's recording. I press record and the numbers weren't going at all. So
I think that's bad.
Yeah, but they are going now. And here's one of the things that people at home might not know this, or in their cars or wherever they are. My brother Terry is the one who puts this show together, and we'll start the show officially. But that's the problem. He never knows where the shows start or end. And it's becoming kind of a game for me to not tell him. He's like, but tell me, he has this high voice when he talks to me, but Frank, tell me when it does end and start. I'm like, well, you just figure it out and I'll trust you to get it right. And then he will, edit it some way, and I'll be like, why'd you do that? I haven't even watched it yet. Yeah. Why'd you do that? He's like, I thought you said to... I'm kidding. But it is awful. Do it again. So,
well, that's what he gets for having pride in his work.
Mm-hmm. Right? Caring about something? Don't care. Not around me, because I'm...
Mail it in, Terry.
I'm going to bully you. So this is where we, for a few seconds, we'll pretend to talk, or we can talk about something, and we'll put the title over it. And we'll be quiet for a few seconds. The music will be playing, hopefully. And then we're going to begin officially right about now. How about that? Is that right about now, Terry Caliendo, now. And yes, keep Talk. Everything in that I was talking about before, but figure out a way to fit the main title in and enough songs so it works. Now I'm kind of impish.
There we go.
Al, it's Al and Frank. We're trying to be serious. Brian Love is on with us again. And we are joined today by Chris Spangle, who I met and have run into a few times at the Bob and Tom show in Indianapolis there. And he was helping me out with a bunch of podcast stuff for the Comic Playground podcast that I'm also doing, that's on the road a little bit there. Not just a little bit, all the way. So, Chris, give us a little bit of background on you. You told me you were doing a podcast, and that the thing I was amazed by is you've been doing this for a few years. Go into that. And I didn't mean to be... I didn't want to be talking down to you, because I was thinking local guy and all this stuff. And I thought it came off terribly by me. But it's like, you probably have a small audience or something like that. And you said, you held it together very nicely and didn't get like offended at all. And you're like, oh, I have 10,000 subscribers. And we got to talking, like, and I totally understood why. It's incredible. And so tell everybody a little bit about the name of your podcast, what you do, what you try to accomplish with it, and we'll go from there.
I just thank you for having me on, and I was amazed that you were talking to me. So I
usually don't, right?
Right. Yes. So this is a wave. You know, Al's much more friendly in person. No, I'm kidding.
No, it's true, but I'm fine with it.
No, it's one of the... I'm a behind the scenes person at the Bob and Tom show, and I like it that way, and I try not to interfere in the conversations that, like, when you and Al and comedians come in, you know, you don't want to be in the middle of that. That's not your job. Your job is to make the show run smoothly and not get in the way of the talent. So I never try to impose. So when we ended up having a conversation, I really enjoyed it, and it was nice to have someone pay attention to me, because I'm the staff nerd there. Tom hired me about 5 years ago to start doing all the digital, and I'm basically the show's podcaster, web editor, social media guru, video editor, along with Jeff Oske, who's also a comedian and the head writer. I think he's the head writer. I'll call him that. And so, yeah, you started talking to me about podcast stuff because that's really what I love. It's my passion. I'm very fortunate to do what I love on a daily basis at the Bob and Tom Show, which I've listened to since I was a kid, being from Indianapolis. And I got there in a weird way because I didn't go to school for video editing or podcasting. I've really learned like video stuff at Bob and Tom. I started out in politics. And if you go all the way back in time, I wanted to be in radio and work for Bob and Tom at 8 years old. And wanted to go into media production.
8 years old, you wanted to be in radio? Were you from 1960?
Here's the good thing about working where I do. Bob and Tom messed me up, and now they have to pay for my therapy.
There we go.
Because I remember listening to John Fox when I was like 5 years old on trips to Florida.
So for people who don't know who he is or was, just brutal... Oh, crazy, filthy stuff.
Yeah. I got in trouble for singing what we called prison bitch in like sixth grade, which is a Bob and Tom bit. So I always loved radio and I love talk radio and my family all listen to talk radio. And so that's really kind of where I thought I would go. I never thought that I'd get to work for Bob and Tom. And went to college, and I faked my way into getting an internship at a local AM talk station, 1430 AM. And that was in 2004.
You faked your way. How did you fake your way?
So I was a history major.
Which, by the way, guys, when he was talking history, that was the thing that blew my mind. Because I would say something, and he would say, well, that you know that's because X, Y, and Z happened. And I go, no. I didn't know X, Y, or Z even existed. So one of the things we do on the show, and what we've been doing, even though we've done some practice shows and we've done some shows that have already, one show that's been released at this point, but I've always said it's great to have a person who actually reads some of these. And we talk a lot about feelings and where we're coming from on this stuff, but sometimes having that background in those historical notations or whatever you want to call them, understanding that helps you understand how things got to a certain place.
Yeah, well, Frank, some of us aren't bogged down by your facts, okay? I go with my
What if you have both? What if you have facts and feelings? Is that all right?
No, you can't. You can only have one or the other. Haven't you guys been paying attention to the news?
You guys have things like wives and girlfriends and children and friends, and I have books, and I sit in my apartment and read. And then go to Bob and Tom, and I come back and I read. So
that's is anybody waiting for Chris to bust into tears? Is that
no, and I want to preface. I'm worried that I should have asked you if this was okay, but every time I look at Chris, I just please don't take this as a me being a jerk because no kind of, I'm not. But I feel like I'm an Endor. You're kind of Ewokian. That's okay. George Lucas is like that too, and I can't even pay his taxes. So
I'm cherubic, yes.
Cherubic,
a man of larger carriage, you might say.
Cherubic, that's a good word, but come on, man, you're good.
So how did you fake your way in? And then we'll get into a little bit more about your podcast and stuff like that.
So I was listening to the radio station that I eventually worked for, and they kept airing sports games, and I can't have that, and so I wrote a complaint letter, and the guy who has become a good friend to this day, he goes, what pizza company do you deliver for? And I told him, and he's like, have you ever thought about an internship? And I said, sure. And so he's like, well, you got to do this. So I go and talk to the advisors, and she's like, you're a history major. I really am not going to give this to you because it makes no sense. And so I was like, well, what do I have to do? And she says, you have to be a comms minor. And I said, no problem. I'm going to do that. I'll do that right now. I signed up for it. And I eventually dropped out roughly two semesters later from IUPUI.
A crippling heroin addiction?
No. Crippling, yes. I went to a school. You know that school in your state where everybody goes when they can't get in anywhere else? That's where I went. I just was not into it. And I went to the day that I really was like, okay, this is not for me. Went to history. And if you can believe it, Frank, the teacher said the first Supreme Court justice was John Marshall. It's actually John Jay. And so I just was like, these people don't know anything.
Would she combine Thurgood Marshall and what happened there?
Well, it just I got to working full time and it just got pretty tough. I still want to go back and finish, but I ended up kind of just knowing it was actually a great thing because I got into the workforce a lot earlier than my peers who all graduated right in 08, which was not a good time. And has led to me having a really good career. So I go to work for this radio station and I listen back to some of those old clips and I know nothing and I sound stupid. And so I just knew that I kind of didn't know what I was talking about. And
that was last week. Don't worry about it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And went on to work full time there in 07 and 08 for the morning show, doing local reporting and really getting into the nuts and bolts of local politics. And a lot of the experiences that I had covering Republicans and Democrats made me go, these two people are totally corrupt. And the system is broken. And a third party is really the only way to fix it. And I was fairly libertarian, but I really didn't become a libertarian until Ron Paul in those 2008 debates kind of solidified a few things that I had struggled with, like foreign policy. I'm very anti-war now.
You were very pro-war before then?
I actually held a pro-war rally, Frank.
What? No. You speak so seriously sometimes that, and deadpan, I'm like, you did?
I did. I actually did.
Did you did? This is real?
This is real.
Yeah. You did a pro-war rally.
2003. It was a support the troops rally.
Okay. But that's different than pro-war.
By sending them to war?
Yes, exactly.
Right. Oh, you're testing Al right now. Look at
good
Al.
News, guys.
Al's been able to stay unemotional so far with us. He's changed his mind, Al. Relax.
I know. I'm miserable.
Oh, okay. Absolutely. Oh, thank goodness. Yeah. I thought we
lost. I was about to get popcorn right on that one.
Yeah. I thought it was Frank. Frank tries to be serious all of a sudden.
I was young at really big key moments in time and impressionable. I mean, I turned 18 on 9/11/2001. And wow. So I was 18 2 days before 9/11. I was a senior in high school and I signed up for Selective Service on September 10th. And then September 11th, I don't know if I can curse.
We try to stay out of it. So.
Yeah, so I was really nervous. Let's put it that way. But it was a profoundly impactful thing for me. Being young and not really having perspective on 9/11, really, it shook me to my core. It changed me in a lot of profound ways. And then, you know, watching all of my friends graduate college and losing some classmates in Iraq. Going to college during the Iraq War debates and that entire time and watching the crackdown on free speech and all that went with that. And then 2008 with the financial crisis and seeing my friends, because you have to understand if you're a millennial like myself, you were told go to a private school. You're going to pay these. We weren't told about the debt, the college student loan debt that you'd get. And you pay this all this money, you're going to get a job at $60,000 a year when you graduate. And my friends graduated with hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt, you know, combined. We're all sitting here going, how are we going to pay with this? We can't get jobs. So it was just very an impactful time in the 2000s for me. And I started out, you know, a good Reaganite Republican with every sort of jingoistic hope and dream you can have in your country. And I still love my country. Still consider myself a patriot. But I think a lot of the things that were taught in school, I started to go, I don't see this actually being applied. And so that really
started. In terms of what? What is that? What do you mean?
I think if you look at the media, for instance, we're told that the media are guardians of truth. And I think if you look at CNN on a daily basis now, you go, this is an identity group who really is protecting their own class. Mm-hmm. Or the government is a thing that we all do together for the good of the people. And my experiences as a reporter, and then which I haven't gotten to, as the head of the Libertarian Party of Indiana, and doing my show, I've just found that things like CPS, for instance, I've talked to mothers who have just had horrible experiences with CPS, and you start to go, it's not that the idea is bad, it's the bureaucracy that makes this not function, and then people get hurt. And so I just started out with a lot of, you look at war, for instance. I think I looked at the world in a way where America does a lot of good around the world, and I think we do that, but there also is, we're 18 years into a war, and how long is it going to keep going? You know, at what point do we say enough? Kids who can sign up for the military today were born after 9/11 and have no idea what they're fighting about. And so you have to start going, are we fighting for certain principles, or are we fighting to make sure that we can sell weapons? And so, like, I just have become pretty cynical at 35 years old. And I have seen the government that I thought was like the government that would was there to protect us become an instrument for enriching certain groups of people. And so and I don't think it's all bad. I'm certainly not I'm not an anarchist.
I'm getting there.
I have to say it's not that I'm a libertarian because I'm greedy and I just want to collect all the money for myself. It's that the things that we're doing aren't working, and so we have to start questioning everything and retool it to work. And I think that is really the most foundational job that I had was 4 years from 08 to 12 working for the Libertarian Party of Indiana, where I set up hundreds of campaigns, hundreds of organizations here in Indiana for libertarians. I was at the founding Indiana Tea Party meeting here in Indiana in 2009. And what I found working there was a lot of well-meaning people want to get involved in politics, but the rules are written by the two major parties against those well-meaning people. And it happens in parties, outside of parties, and across the board. And so it was another kind of troubling experience. And so I decided that I would start a podcast to kind of highlight some of these issues, because I would talk to dozens of people on a weekly basis on the local ground over these periods of years. And I met a lot of people and had a lot of great stories that I wanted to share with people. And so what I've done with my show, We Are Libertarians, which you can find at wearelibertarians.com.
And feel free to plug that on. You don't have to try, and we'll make sure we do. Go ahead. What you can do with your show. Cause I want to ask you after you get to that, what you believe libertarian is.
What I was gonna ask, like, I was just gonna ask elevator pitch
of, like, if you had to say it in like three or four sentences, like, what do libertarians believe?
Do you want me to keep on with the history, or do you want me to start there, like with the actual ideology? Let me start with what a libertarian is, because that's probably what a lot of people are going,
because I think the whole time we're listening, I find you very interesting, and the story of getting there, because you also told me you worked with underprivileged kids, and that changed how you looked at a lot of things. But I think everybody, when you start saying libertarian, I think when people hear labels that, sometimes I wonder if I sway into there or if I don't. I don't even know, but when somebody hears a label, sometimes they go, oh, they already have a connotation. They have a belief of who that person is. And even when you signed in, I was like, you have your American flag there, which I think is, it just made me kind of laugh and go, oh, that's identity. That's great. But even in this world we live in, sometimes people are like, they use the flag as a negative, I feel. And sometimes people look at it in a negative, and it's a weird time where, I don't know if it's the same for you guys. It might be completely different, but growing up, to me, the American flag was always this, this is the best. This isn't the, I'm starting to sound Trumpish. This is, it's that we're making it great again. But it's that, it's a weird thing where, you know, we don't have all the truths and histories and stuff like that. So the libertarian, where you're coming from, like Al said, the elevator speech, so to speak.
Yeah. So the two sentence,
you're going to go three.
A lot of people give is, thank you, is, socially, like socially liberal and economically conservative. So if you were to look at it in terms of issues, then libertarians would fall on economic issues with conservatives. We need to have free markets. We need to allow individuals personal freedom when it comes to their economic choices. But at the same time, socially liberal, keep government out of your bedroom, allow people to live their lives as they see fit. I think that it is a mistake to kind of view libertarianism in terms of, all right, I believe this on this issue, check, I'm a libertarian, check on the, because it kind of confuses people. I think you really have to start with your personal principles when you're talking about politics. And I didn't really get libertarianism for years until I heard this guy named Marshall Fritz give an explanation of libertarianism. And
who's Marshall Fritz?
Marshall Fritz was this guy who founded this libertarian organization, and he was like the marketing guy for the libertarian movement. And I ended up working at this organization that he founded, and I fell in love with the guy. And you can find, if you go to wearelibertarians.com and / what is a libertarian, or I think it's / libertarianism. There's a link that says what is libertarianism. You'll see his little clip of his speech in there. And he basically explained it like this. Is it moral for me to take something that you own, Frank? Is it moral for me to come over and take your microphone? No, that's stealing. I would say no. Okay. Right.
Right.
Is it more moral if I say, I'm going to take your microphone, but I'm going to give you a Mr. microphone in return, something of lesser value, but at least you have a different microphone? Most of us would say no. Mm-hmm. He said, if Brian, Al, and I vote on taking your microphone, does that make the morality change? And he explained in terms of individualism that if you start with a person's individual morality and the things that we're taught as kids, don't hit people, don't steal their stuff, don't lie, don't defraud people, then you start to develop an ideology from there. And that really is where I start. I started from my personal value system and started looking at the world in a different way. And I look at a lot of the government that we have now, and it intrudes on an individual's right to hire the people that they want to hire, marry the people that they want to marry, for other countries to have their own sovereignty because Americans do certain things with we'll get into all that later. And so you start to go, the individual needs to make the decision. And is this organization, is this corporation, is this government starting to interfere in that? And are they using force? And force is really the foundational principle of libertarianism. Like, this is the singular thing. We do not initiate force to bring about social or economic goals. It's not morally correct for me to use force in any way, shape, or form to get you to live the way that I want. And so it's not morally correct for me to form a government and force you to do what I want. Now, that's a very ideological way of looking at things. It's not a very practical way of looking at things when you're talking about 2019, because we have a massive government that is involved in every area of our life. Look around your room or your car or wherever you're listening to this and ask yourself, is the federal government involved in that thing? The answer is yes, because literally everything you're touching, the federal government now has some regulation or some tax or some way to manipulate your behavior. And so it's very...
And Apple, too. Apple's the other
one. Apple, too. Yeah.
Appletarians. The Appletarians.
Right. So to bring it all back around, libertarians believe in free markets. We believe in peace. And we believe in harmonious systems where people work together, and that when you introduce force, you start to divide people. We believe in the individual and the right of the individual to govern themselves, and that less government is easier to control, because once the government starts to regulate, then the politicians start to get bought off. And so right. Then the corporations start to control things instead of the people. And it's sort of a radical idea, but it's the radical idea that the founders of this country believed in. It's the founding principles of the United States of the United States. And when you go back in our history and you really read what they were saying, or you watch John Adams on HBO, you start to see, oh, wow, these guys were libertarians. This is the government that they were trying to set up. And then it just got messed up along the way. Like Alexander Hamilton immediately started trying to mess things up by starting a war with the French and centralizing the government. And the Alien and Sedition Acts, where they were trying to keep immigrants out and shut the press down and put them in jail. And it started from the very beginning. So every generation, I think, has to relearn these principles. And so even though it seems far-fetched and this will never work and we can't do it in 2019, what I try to do is explain these principles on a weekly basis, on a daily basis at this point, to relearn these ideas so the next generation can start to make better choices than I think my generation has made, Gen X, baby boomers, the greatest generation, have made before us. So that's I don't know if that made it you more confused or
no. I was going to ask the other guy.
Oh my gosh, so many good nuggets in what you said.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah, that's what I want to see. How did that definition and where he's coming from on libertarianism hit you guys? Because
Al, would you like to go first?
I'll piggyback off you. I definitely have some thoughts.
Because for me, just quickly, Chris. It's interesting that you said you minored in communications because I did the other thing in school. I actually got a communications and English degree and minored in history. Ah. So I will be asking you lots of questions about in the future, near or distant, about clarification on things or your thoughts on stuff. It's just, oh my gosh, so many things you said sparked thoughts and curiosity for me. The one thing that I can pick off right off the top of my head was your comments on media. It was interesting to me to hear you explain your realization on how media is portrayed, how the idea that when you were young, it was everything that they said that you heard, you believed to be the truth, the generator of truth, the harborers of truth. Or harbingers of truth. And when in actuality, I mean, you can even go back before the country was created and speak of heralds that stood in the street and gave the news. The media has always been controlled. So it's always interesting to me, the people who share the media are the ones who have always been in control of the message that's gone out, I guess is a better way to put it. So it's always interesting to me when people realize that you have writers and reporters and analysts who bank their careers on the validity of their stories and the accuracy of their research and the dependability of their sources. And then you have those who work in other areas of media who like to throw a slight spin on the validity of a thing or add their own editorial, opinion on a thing. And then the media outlet that is showing said thing then edits it to fit their audience. The 50s was a time, especially as TV became huge in everybody's living rooms, they did that. I mean, as simple as, which even makes reference to what we talked about in the last podcast, as simple as the word pregnancy. You couldn't say the word pregnancy on TV because it was deemed to be a woman's issue and that people didn't want to hear about it in their home. And
it was with child, right?
It was, they had to say with child. Yes. With child. Or, I can't remember the other phrase, but that's just a small example.
I believe they used to say prego. Is that?
Yeah. That's so, a bun in the oven, bun in the oven.
Is that real or is that?
Yes. That was a real phrase that was used.
Can I throw something in to jump on what you were saying there for a second? I took a class called Critical Thinking in the Mass Media in college, and it was probably the most eye opening. I thought I thought along this route, but it was a great eye opener. And this professor's actually come out to some shows and stuff like that. Even in the last couple of years, Greg Hoffman, who always wore a turtleneck and just would talk like this, We never knew what he was saying, but that was
probably because of the whole turtleneck.
And he's like, hey, Frank,
in your class.
The turtleneck made him talk like that.
Oh, bro, that. We thought it was squeezing the air out. So, but his whole thing was every story in the news, any report that's ever been done has a slant because it's through human eyes, a human brain, and then comes out. You can't ever get anything 100% factual because you don't have the backstory and you're coming at it at a certain time in a certain place. So it's going to have a little bit of a slant, and you have to accept that because we're always going to be there as we are human. But what you're saying there is the added slant, the knowing slant, I think.
Correct.
And that's correct. Okay. So go from there, because that was a big.
Let me tell you a piece of my history that kind of ties into that. That really was the first moment when I went, oh, this is all rigged, because there were a couple of moments like that. This is the first one though. It was, and it all happened within like a 6 month period. First with the media, and then with the parties. So I'm at here in Indianapolis. We had a mayor's race in 2007 that was crazy. It was. A Democratic mayor who was running for his third term, who had like millions of dollars in the bank, and he was running against a Republican that nobody had ever heard of. The party wasn't helping. He had like $100,000 in the bank. But we had a really bad summer where there was a lot of crime in Indianapolis. We had he raised income taxes to help fight to raise money for the police. We had a property tax crisis here in Indiana. And so people were getting 1,000% increases in their property taxes. And that was really like, this is where the first tea parties were held on July 4th, 2007 on the governor's lawn. There was a huge tea party and rally, and it wasn't called that yet, but it was a tax revolt. And this Republican challenger was giving a rebuttal at City Hall during the mayor's budget speech. So the mayor gets up, he speaks to the city council. He says, here's my budget. It's August, right before the elections. The challenger gets up at the end and gives a public address. I'm walking out with a reporter from the local from a local station, and I say, so how much of this are you going to use? And she says, oh, we're not going to use any of the challenger's speech. And I said, what do you mean? She goes, well, my editors have made the decision that because he's not bought any ads, we're not going to give him any free advertising. And my jaw hit the floor, because that's when I realized the local news was, which you can touch, you can talk to these people, you know the people that make the news in your local town, they're making these sort of decisions based on profit. Uh-oh, what do you think's going on at CNN or Fox News or the Washington Post? And that really shook me to my core. Now, fast forward to the Republican convention in 2008. I'm a Ron Paul fan. I'm working for the radio station as a reporter. And this woman comes up crying to me, and she goes, they've just kicked 350 Ron Paul delegates out of the convention because they don't want Ron Paul delegates to go to the national convention and cause trouble for John McCain. You've got to tell the story. They've broken their own rules. They've broken their own election laws. And I went, okay, so if I want to reform the party from the inside, they're just going to change the rules on me, break the law, and nobody's going to hold them accountable. And so that's when I really decided I need to go do something else, you know, and that's eventually why I wanted to start the podcast, because I see podcasts and social media as the ability to take the power of the media away from the people who are just trying to feed us fluff, because it's a two-part problem. We can blame the media and say they only want to profit and they only run the Kardashians, but we're also the ones that love to have our ears tickled. We're also the ones that choose the Kardashian stories over the Pentagon missing $3 billion.
Like, let me ask you this.
And we all do it through what media?
Right. Isn't it funny,
that's
though?
The irony of it.
This is I don't mean to stop you because it's informative, but I've caught myself doing that and then stopping. Like I'll click on a story and be like, why am I doing this? I really don't. Do I really care about this proposal that's never going to have an effect? I mean, and I get on my wife about this stuff. Like all she cares about is the royal wedding or something. And I'm like, it's not going to affect you in any way, shape or form.
Well, I would make the argument that we all have to have something that we nerd out on. Mm-hmm. Right. And I feel like your comic books are her royal wedding, is my fantasy football, is, you know, somebody else's weekend fishing trip. Yeah, some kind of like video game tournament. Yeah. It's, I think we all do need to find selves, find a way to escape it, and, you know, it, to each other, to the person that's not into it, you think the Kardashian things are ridiculous, but there are people that do their makeup tutorials and then start their own YouTube page and make money, make a profit from it, or genuinely receive joy from it. So I would say that. And I don't want to cut you off, Frank, but Chris, I've been listening to you, and I hear the word rigged a lot, and that's definitely a trigger word for me. I feel like this whenever you start, I think it's a poor way to start any kind of venture where you think that the system is already rigged against you, and that's coming from a black man. You can make the argument that marginalized people can say that the system is rigged against them, and in a lot of cases, you can make a strong case for that being the point. But I worry about approaching anything that I do that way. I would rather it be rigged so that way when I win, I feel even more confident about my abilities. I will. When you say the word rigged, I just wonder, because it seems like you mentioned profit. You mentioned that CNN and Fox News, you know, wants to turn a profit. But I would think that would fly directly in the face of your economic laissez-faire kind of attitude, in terms of like everybody can hire who they want and government should step back. If Fox News or CNN does research, market research, finds out who watches their show, 60-year-old white woman, 40-year-old black men, and then cater their program to that to sell more Tide and Pizza Hut, why is that egregious to you?
Two very fair points, and I will concede the rigged part, because that is just something to me that the system exists as it is, but I don't believe that the system can't be reformed or changed. If I didn't, I wouldn't pay attention to any of this. I wouldn't spend any time doing my podcast. You know, I spend an extra on top of my 40-hour a week job. I spend 20 on that. I wouldn't do that time and waste people's time by doing a podcast if I didn't think that it could be reformed. I'm sure we'll talk a lot about that. So that is a fair point about that particular word.
Can I cut you off for 1 second?
Sure.
Al, if he had said the media seemed unfair to me, would that have less of a triggering effect on you than him using the word rigged? Because I wasn't taken back by rigged as much. I could feel a little bit maybe of tension, and it was a word that...
Oh. Yeah, no, it's no tension. I just and unfair, I think, I don't even know if that's the right word. And Chris, I don't want you to lose your train of thought, because I'm really interested in what you have to say. I think that we kind of all engage, and we decide what parts of life that we want to be. There's this thing about fairness that I don't know where we all decided that we're entitled to this. The media is a company that is trying to turn a profit and keep eyeballs. Anytime somebody's selling commercials, they are automatically, they have an agenda. Their agenda is to not close their doors for business. And they're going to do what they need to do to make sure that happens. And I believe it's on all of us. And I believe every man on this podcast right now probably does go to several sources to verify things, because mm-hmm. I don't believe things that I hear necessarily, you know, because I understand that people do have an agenda with whatever they do. When somebody comes up to you and says, "Hey, mister, how you doing?" They're about to ask you for something. They want something from you. When you approach a woman and she's on the street, you might want to take her on a date. You might want to ask her where she got that coat, because you want to buy one for your wife. But you have an agenda. Every interaction we have with a human being, we do have an agenda. It doesn't have to be a particularly nefarious agenda, but I think the idea that we expect anything other from our media that we would in any other phase of our life, I think is a fool's errand.
That was downright libertarian of you, Al.
Hey, I'm learning, bro. Like, I'm really fascinated. And I mean, Christian and I have known each other for a while, so I didn't know this about you, and I'm really interested.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
But that's another thing.
I'm learning a lot about libertarianism.
Yeah, because we all have, and this is what I love about what we're doing, is I've heard the term libertarian so many times in my life. I don't even like to label myself. I think I'd probably fit in there somewhere, but I haven't researched enough to know. But that's what's great about what we're doing, is all three of us are learning from somebody who's something. And I bet you that's a lot of people listening to this.
Hey, what's a libertarian? It's a guy that likes to read books, right?
But it's like, it's
that's a nerd in Indianapolis.
God dang it. I thought I knew what that was.
But there's that element of, somebody has a connotation to who you are and what you believe 100%. I think a lot of things you're saying are fair, and also the things that Al is bringing up are great points, and it's just such a great back and forth. Okay, so I'm sorry.
I think anybody who's willing to take a stand and make a point or have, you know, I think we display little acts of courage every single day in our lives, and speaking up, I think, is something that a lot of people have kind of, we've atrophied those muscles of talking about religion and politics because of the phrase, they're not supposed to talk about religion and politics. And I think that's done a disservice to society, because I think we've lost the ability to have these kind of conversations where you start from a place of respect and understanding that everyone in the conversation deserves dignity, and that you're not going to call somebody stupid just because they disagree with you. Al has a completely different set of life experiences than I have. And it doesn't make me superior. It just makes us different. And you start to converse about those differences. And what you find is points of understanding and points of agreement. And that's where we have to start building society and building social norms. I think we have eroded the social norms of the way that our grandparents and our parents grew up. And so now we have to rebuild some of those things again for the internet age. I think Me Too is definitely a big part of that. Like, Me Too, in my mind, is something where we're all going, okay, somebody like R. Kelly, we can't prop this person up. They may have gotten away with it in the old version of society, but in the internet age, you can't behave this way. You have to, you know, and so how do you call that person out and check that behavior and check the behavior of other men while also respecting the fact that he may be innocent, right? So that's what I love about the internet and the internet age, is that you can have these kind of conversations, and we've all become publishers of information, and we all have the ability to start discerning what is valuable information or not. And I think that is a big detriment to a lot of major media, because we're all sitting here going, what you're saying doesn't necessarily match the experiences that I have when I talk with my friends online or in person or in group messages. And that's why I find, like, the crackdown on political speech on these social networks to be troubling, or the curtailing of comedians or any kind of speech. It shouldn't be curtailed, because you should make better speech. You should hear that and then go, well, here's the counterpoint to that. Like, here's what Alex Jones says about lizard people. Here's why he's crazy. Right, like,
you got to understand. You have to understand that the lizard people are trying to turn things around. That's what's going to happen here, guys. And we are. I've been attacked by a lizard human, and the shadow people, and the lizard people are mating. And this is a terrible situation where we have shadow lizard people who are fundamentally trying to change us from the inside. Because they sneak through a scab or something of that nature and bring it out, and
you're not angry enough.
Yeah, there's a social norm.
Yeah, yeah.
No, but here, one thing you said too is differences.
Yeah,
differences are what make everybody great, right? And in learning to live with everybody who is different, you learn from them, as opposed to shutting down people because they are different. I think that's a great thing.
But I would say to that, Frank, though, we are men of a certain age, and we've been lucky enough. I think I can speak for all of us to have had very robust lives and very very layered lives, where we've had a chance to meet people from different walks of life, etc. I would say, and I think one thing that it is a valid point when we talk about the internet and its impact on our society. It's what you have to remember is not the 35-year-old Frank or the 65-year-old Frank. I took 30 years off. Or you know, the 35-year-old Chris Spangle. Brian, you look like you're 18, so I don't know how old you are.
70. He's 73.
I'm 45, actually. That's so it. Like, I'll put it out there.
You guys think about yourselves at your lowest, weakest point, maybe when you were 14, 15 years old, you were kind of disenchanted. Some people, you know, they get into a funk. And different than I think when we grew up, which was in an analog world, kids growing up in a digital internet age, you find a kid. And that's the way, you know, the way that skinheads recruit now is they find kids. They feel like they're loners. They feel like society doesn't want them. They then start to, start with low level misogyny. Like, hey, don't you know why you don't have a girlfriend? Because, you know, these chicks out here don't know a really good man. And you go, yeah, you know what? I do deserve a woman. And then after that, it goes, you know why you don't have one? Because these black guys are taking on you. And that's how it starts. And I wonder how many young kids will never get to where we are at 35, where we've led these very interesting lives and met this tapestry of people, because they will get sucked off and funneled into some part of the internet. And that part of the internet will, strangely enough, compartmentalize them, where they will only be interacting with people that think alike like them.
Al, you are. Do you mind if I chime in, Chris?
No, please.
You are hitting on right on the nail for me, because I have a teenage daughter. She's soon to be 14, and for those of us who grew up in an analog age, it forced us to be social. When the sun came up in the summer, we were outside. We played all day until dinner. We went in for dinner and then went back outside, and we were social with all the kids in the neighborhood, all the other parents in the neighborhood who yelled at us and told us to get off their lawn, whatever. We were social, and then we didn't come back in until the street lamp came on. So now kids, I mean, pick whatever issue you want, be it that it's not as safe in our environment for kids to play outside, be it that we live in an age where analog is no longer, because the analog is no longer or very rare to find, kids have accessibility to things from the outside on their tablet, on their cell phone, on their computer, on their gaming system, on their portable gaming system. If they wanted to, they wouldn't have to interact with a live kid their age once. They wouldn't have to. And so for you, like you talking about the accessibility from these factions, whatever the faction may be, it's so interesting to me, because I have to fight against that all the time. I have to actually teach my daughter to research something without looking at Google. I have to teach her how to, she asks me questions about different things that go on. I go, I don't know. Why don't you look it up? And it drives her crazy when I say that, because it forces her to engage socially. And I find that point, I don't know how we fix that. You know,
as a parent, I'm the same way. And Frank, I don't know what you're dealing with, but like my son, and when his friends come over, they go to different rooms in the house and play on their.
Wait a second. There's kids that come over to your house.
Yes.
My son will say stuff like, I'll be like, what'd you do today? I hung out with Evan. Oh, did he come over?
Quick sec.
No, he didn't come over. Well, did you go over there? No. What do you mean you hung out with Evan? Oh, we played Fortnite. Like there was a point where when Fortnite was really getting big, and I talk about this in my act, there was a month where I didn't see him. I didn't know where, you know, I was like, and at a certain point, you know, you want to kind of let them grow and do their own thing, but I was letting him do that. Like, you've got to interact some. You have to be part of this. I talk about this in my act too. It's like, I said, he goes, hey, Dad, you want to watch me play some basketball? I'm like, absolutely. I went to the driveway. He went to his room. I'm like, what are you doing? so I can play an Xbox. I'm like, I don't want to watch you play Xbox. That's not that, like, it's combined. And this is a smart kid. And it's like, it's combining in his mind that that's playing basketball. I'm like, no, that's somebody who wrote code and you're pressing buttons. That doesn't interest me. I want to be out there, rebound. I want to miss some shots. I want to take some jabs at you and make fun of you a little bit. You make fun of me. We go back and forth. This is a kid, and I, again, this is stuff I talk about in my acts. I want you to know why it's so incredibly polished. but it's he was playing. He goes in to play Fortnite. I didn't know what it was, and I go and he can't talk to another human being, or he can now. He's getting better at it because we've started talking about this. But he couldn't talk to another human being. If he would try to talk to somebody, it was like he would look away, like the person had a bad toupee, and then look back at it, kind of thing. But you put that Xbox headset on and put him in his room, and it's like we will form in a 2x2 formation. This is a code red. This is a code. Like, who are you, the army general from Toy Story? I've never heard you talk to another human being, direct them, do anything. And if these kids aren't looking at somebody directly, they can talk forever. But as soon as you look eye to eye, it gets weird. And that's the opposite of what it's supposed to be, right?
Yeah. And so let me pick up and let me kind of answer Al's question from way back about the media and profit and all that stuff and that tension.
Please.
You know, I just to that point, I was terrified the other day when I met with a group of students who were in high school, and I asked them, like, what do you do for fun on the weekends? And they said, oh, we stay at home and play on our phones. And it's not like us sounding like old guys. It's literally like, this is what Gen Z is doing. Like, they're eroding those social skills. And I think there's some very beneficial conversations happening about the role of technology and personal devices in society right now. But I don't think that those are happening on major media news necessarily. I think those are happening on places like the Joe Rogan podcast or this podcast or, you know, I think they're happening in places where you can have longer form conversations, more independent media outlets where people are talking about what interests them or what trends they're noticing in society, but not necessarily what trends they're trying to push. And so When I look at the major media, I go, the argument on a CNN or in a newspaper is built to get clicks. It's built to get, and it comes from the shift to digital for TV news stations, for newspapers. There's been a fundamental shift in those business models. It went from, we're going to put this piece on the air, or we're going to put this in print, and we're going to fund our business model by selling advertisements. For you young kids, they put Craigslist on the paper, and then that's how you'd find your stuff. And so the reality is that the newspapers, the major media outlets, they have now had to start competing for attention and competing for ad revenue. And there is a resentment from the tops of these companies that they have to do that.
And now, so are you assuming that
I'm making educated guesses.
Okay. So,
okay? I won't tell you where I get my education.
There you go. They're keeping your source.
Having talked to a lot of local news people, a lot of local print people working in the radio industry, there's a lot of resentment from major media that their business model took such a big hit. You know, radio, ironically, is the one that's actually still thriving and has kind of stabled off because you're kind of a captive audience in your car. But if you're a TV news station, you're almost a digital station at this point. And you've got the massive overhead of having all the towers and all this equipment and the broadcast fees. If you're a newspaper, the tremendous amount of you have to run the newspaper, print the newspaper, deliver the newspaper. It's a lot of competition. And you're in competition with the Daily Beast, with the Drudge Report, with the Daily Caller, with, Raw Story, the Huffington Post, who can turn things out much quicker. And they're getting just as much digital ad revenue. So there was actually a great conversation on Smirconish that I heard from the Philadelphia Inquirer head, who said, we missed digital. We just didn't get there fast enough because the digital companies came in and they completely eradicated our ability to compete with them because Facebook built better targeting and we couldn't do that. We could broadcast to the city of Philadelphia, not to a zip code. And so now that we look at the conversation around Trump and Russia and Alex Jones and all these other people, I think they see an opportunity to let's not have to compete with as many voices. Let's get some regulation on this. Let's not have as many voices. You know, you see hit pieces on somebody like Jordan Peterson. I think if you read only the New York Times and the Washington Post, you would think Jordan Peterson was a Nazi. And if you're a young male listener, you understand the impact in the lives of young men that guy's had, because he's coming along saying, here's the social norms you're supposed to have if you're a healthy man, emotionally, mentally, physically, you know. And so then they look at the hit pieces and they resent that, and it creates a lot of problems.
I've actually seen that quite a bit. Hey, Chris, yeah. we're going to lose Al here in a second. Oh. So I think what we're going to do is, I think even though we're in the middle of everything, and I can see Brian going, oh, man, I had some.
No, I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good.
We need to do a part two really quick.
Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to be out of town for a little bit, but I think we can do this as a cliffhanger. And tremendous, Chris, because I think this is the most we've learned on. We've only done two shows, but we've learned a lot. And Dave Houston wanted to be on the show badly because he loves certain things about libertarians, and he has questions, and I think it'll be perfect because he's going to listen to this and have some questions for you as well. I thought this was incredibly – this was definitely a more serious episode than our first one, but I think that's great. I think because I learned a lot, I'm gathering and forming some questions. Give your We Are Libertarians website again and information.
Yes, and I'll give you the punchline. You got to listen next time. It is a cliffhanger. So let's, Al, make sure you ask me that again, because I want to answer that fully.
Will do.
Please follow me on any platform. You can go to literally any platform. Type in We Are Libertarians. You'll find us. You can follow me on social media. Follow the podcast. It's wearelibertarians.com. I have us on literally everything. So please listen at your convenience.
Great. And all information, we'll put that all on alanfrank.com as well and get it all the information out there.
Can I add to the cliffhanger?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so you as we were speaking earlier, you referenced our president, President Trump, and you said, make America great again.
It's tremendous.
Trivia question. Where did he get that phrase from?
Ronald Reagan. Made it up. I made it. Everything I do, I make up myself. Cliffhanger. Cliff Clavenhanger.
Two
this is a Cliff Clavenhanger. I'm going to come back and have all the information
from.
For you.
It was reinforced by one. But it was originally said by another. Chris kind of snuck it out there, but
I don't know the other. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, have people look it up.
After
have
Ronald
people look
Reagan.
It up. We'll put it out there. Al, we'll see. All it. Right, we're wrapping up. Thanks, everybody. Perfect. And I wish I'd have realized this earlier. My fault. Chris, can't wait for more. Brian, this is great. I'm actually going to listen back to a lot of this because I had little bits of questions, but I didn't want to stop you, Chris. So,
yeah.
You told me I should, and I realize now that you're the Bill Walton of political, like, how great is this? We'll go on for. But it's great because we were learning so much. It's exactly what I want from the show. So
feel free to stop me, yeah, because what I do on my show is just like take current events and apply libertarian principles and explain the story, and like I get going, and then I'm like, oh, I have a co-host here I need to talk to.
Right. Great. If you guys see the feed, I don't know if you can see it. I just canceled Al out because he left. We're not going to go. I don't want to go any further without him, though. So wearelibertarians.com has all the information. We're getting back to you. We'll probably hopefully get, if I wasn't on the road so much this week, I would do a lot more. We would get into this immediately. I'm actually going to try and see if I can figure out a way on the road to maybe chime in and figure out how to get in with you again, because I'm interested to hear more as well. So great job. Thanks, guys. alanfrank.com for all the information, and we're going to put stuff up on the screen as well for everybody. That's it. Anything to say in conclusion, Brian?
Great stuff. I can't wait till the next one.
Yeah, awesome.